All right, Chris Johnston coming up. Our boy Steve Phillips later in the hour. We got a big series, big week here, big homestand for the Jays. They got three with Boston starting tonight and then five against Tampa because it was a four-game series and they got a makeup on a lost game and a pass, so that's a doubleheader on Saturday. And that is going to be a litmus test, right? Like, yes. What are you made of here? You just dropped two or three against Milwaukee. You know, you've been losing series. Obviously, we know what happened against the White Sox, the Yankees. They split four-game series against Baltimore. The Jays are not in a great place. Now, the nature of baseball is long season. Generally, the disposition of a team really does not change from day to day, and I wouldn't expect it to be any different today. I think they show up to the park. They're still a confident team. They should be a confident team. They're still in a playoff spot. They're still above 500. Positive run differential. But Barrios is a mess right now. Kikuchi is a mess. The bullpen is on fumes. And the Red Sox are maybe the hottest team in baseball. So,
not a good combo.
Better be ready to gear up, right? You got Gausman on the mound tonight. His last outing, he rectified a lot of issues. He looked good. But this is why you give him a five-year deal. This is why you give Barrios a seven-year deal for yesterday not to happen. Like, as much as Kikuchi was a mess, and he has been, I'm more disappointed in Barrios because he knew he had to give them something yesterday. The bullpen was on fumes based on what had happened on Saturday.
Yeah.
And for him to go out there and get lit up the way he got lit up, it's just, it's not seizing the moment, and you need that from a guy you paid $131 million to.
I wonder how the fans, the Toronto fans, because any sport, regardless of what it is, they always have kind of the Wendell Clark, Doug Gilmore kind of mentality, I think, in Toronto sports. And Barrios, like, it seems like he'll get waxed, and he'll be at the end of the dugout and yucking it up with the guys, and it's just like when William Nylander kind of yucks it up when he's thinking the joint, everyone's like, does this guy not care? Does he care enough? I just wonder what the kind of, you know, this guy only goes out there once every 5 days, but just he's getting himself into some hot water is basically what I'm trying to say. Like,
oh,
he
yeah.
needs to get his head out of his ass.
Big time. Yeah, big time. Like, Kikuchi, you know, is a different story. Look at, like, I got to believe Shaparin Atkins getting a little bit nervous here because when you consider, you know, the money they've spent, one of the, you know, a couple of years ago, we know they gave Roark that deal and it completely blew up in their face. Completely blew up in their face to the point where he didn't even get through the two-year contract. The Hyunjin Ryu deal now is a failure, ultimately. It's not their fault because he got hurt. It's
injury.
Not. But you can't argue it's been a success. He had the one first year where he had 12 starts in a pandemic-shortened season. He was outstanding. Outstanding. Awful playoff game, game two. Wasn't ready to start game one. Needed more rest. Comes out game two. Got blown up. And their season came to an end. Last year wasn't very good for him. This year's a complete write-off. I'm not sure we see a pitch again, right? So $80 million for him. Roark, what was it, $14 million the first, $12 million the second. You know, they've given Barrios big money. They've given Gausman big money. Like, they
need
any
other business. Any other business.
They need them to work.
Like, the owner could have a chart up on a whiteboard saying, like, you don't get away with that in any other business. It's like, you're going to make, what, a 85, you've made $85 million worth of errors here, whatever they accumulated to be. And I know it's pro sports, things don't work out. But if that number gets to a total where ownership is like, hang on a second here, like, this is not a joke.
Mm-hmm. Right, but, I mean, can any of these deals be salvaged?
Absolutely.
These players, that's where I'm going.
It's still
a half a season left.
Now, not Ryu. Ryu's done.
No,
right?
Ryu, that's an injury.
Barrios is the guy that could, like they said, they're paid him like to be the ace. If he goes legend the rest of the way through, it kind of makes you forget about everything.
Of course it does. Everything's right. About them, you know, building towards September and into the playoffs. Barrios has not forgotten how to pitch. Like, I'm not concerned that this guy's just going to completely fade. But it's been 15 starts into the season now. Like, we're well into the season. Well into it. And he has really had issues. And his last two starts have been implosions. He needs to figure it out. And he's throwing strikes. He's just getting hit extremely hard. Like, he's given up more home runs than at any point in his career. He's getting hit a lot. Kikuchi is the one that's more concerning. Like, Gausman will be fine, and he's had a great year still. Like, he's had a couple – you know, he had a blip in the radar, a few starts where he was getting hit, but his numbers are still very good. I think Berríos, I believe he'll be much better by the end of the season. I believe that. And at some point over the next year or so, he will rectify this and be a stud again. I fully believe that. Kikuchi, though, I don't know. Like, Kikuchi at no point in his career as a major leaguer has been a guy that you can really rely on. He had a great first half of the season last year. Like, Kikuchi's a different story. Like, they might skip a start or two coming up and let him completely reset. He's, like, 14 starts into a three-year deal at $36 million. That's a different story. That yeah. one, I'm not as confident not that best. All of a sudden.
I'll tell you what, just from a viewing experience, I see him and I turn a tube on, and it's like, okay, Kikuchi, and I'm like, can you please give me something today and don't be a complete gong show out there? And yeah. it hasn't really happened a lot.
No.
Yep.
Hasn't gone well.
Hasn't.
Remember
gone
the
so
Roark
well.
Vibe? He's not Roark, but he kind of is getting like a Roark vibe where it's like, you're supposed to be doing something and you're not right now.
No, he's not. So Steve Phillips on that more later this hour. We'll try to get the Clayton Kershaw clip in about Freddie Freeman and his return to Atlanta, the brawl in the ballgame yesterday. But the cup has been handed out. The season is basically over. We're into draft season. We're into free agency season. We're into the GM season is what we're into. And joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN hockey insider, Chris Johnston. What's happening, CJ?
Not much. Didn't get to bed last night after that cup got handed out. So,
good,
not,
man.
Not going to be 100% for this hit today.
No, that's all right. Good, man. Like, you saw it up close and personal. It from our vantage point up here, it looked like, even though the score didn't dictate that or indicate it, that Colorado just completely dismantled Tampa last night.
Yeah, I think they just finally took the last bit of gas that was left in them and vanquished it because – you know, they just didn't have any push in the third period. You know, you give credit to the Avalanche, obviously, for the way they took control of a one-goal game and allowed that to happen. But you would expect, under those circumstances, Tampa to have more than four shots in the final period. But, you know, I got to say, the Lightning, for me, I was blown away that they even stretched out their third run at this as long as they did with all the injuries they had and you know, missing Braden Point for a huge chunk of the playoffs. I thought that they pushed a pretty dynamic team in the Avalanche even farther than I thought they were going to be able to.
CJ, Brian and Noodles were talking earlier in the show. I don't know who it was from the Avalanche who said, looking back at our teams, we thought we were good and ready to win, but now that they've actually done it, those teams in the past, who was it, their coach or was it Landeskog?
There's McKinnon on the ice last night.
McKinnon. So McKinnon says, looking back at those teams, we weren't ready to win. So if you could put it into words what you watched with these guys, what was it that you think changed?
Well, I think a couple of things. They added a little bit more beef on their blue line. You know, they were a team with a lot of puck movers back there, and I think that they changed up the mix. And then, you know, it's hard to ignore their depth. I mean, they scored more than four goals a game, I believe, on average through the playoffs, and they had just a, you know, really three high-end lines that could score goals for them. And so, you know, it's probably those two things. And then just the mindset of being through it and figure out how hard it is. I mean, as much as, you know, I think we would all agree Colorado was clearly the better team and deserves to win that Stanley Cup. I mean, there's lots of moments where it can go off the rails. They lose, you know, game five at home and start to feel a little bit of pressure. They're down early in game six. You know, there's moments in that series where if you don't have the right focus then and to find a way to push through, you know, they won two games in the series in overtime. It was still close, even though, you know, I think that they were the fresher, better, more determined team ultimately when it got to the final. So, you know, I think you're probably leading me down the road to, you know, how did some teams, whether it's the Leafs or the Oilers or other teams, maybe even the Hurricanes that have been really good at times in a regular season, but not really had a whole lot to show for it in the playoffs. How do they get there? I think it's just there's a process, you know, for top players to learn how to play in those moments, and then obviously getting the right mix with your team, and that's going to change from year to year because of the cap.
CJ, you mentioned Tampa being beat up. You know, Patrick Maroon in his media afterwards last night was visibly emotional, but also said something that kind of resonated where he said, you guys are going to be shocked and blown away when the injury list comes out. And even I believe John Cooper said, you know, in if it was regular season, half their team would have been on the IR and they would have played with half the minor league team. Is there any leaks or anything coming out of, you know, how serious a lot of these injuries were? Because they were basically, it was a parade down the tunnel. Every shift, it seemed like these guys were having something dealt with or something frozen, that type of stuff. And Colorado was nicked up by the end as well, with Nichushkin wearing the sandal. Burakovsky, you know, it sounds like he had a broken foot and a broken hand. So there's lots of injuries on both sides.
Right, and you got Kadri too, who turned a six-week prognosis for his recovery into two, and couldn't take any face-offs. And I actually saw his hand last night. It looked gruesome after his surgery. I mean, yeah, that's the price of it. I think Tampa, they're going to have to put out like a booklet to document the whole thing. It sounds like, you know, pretty significant injury to point. I guess that's self-evident in the sense that he missed four games of the Stanley Cup Final, and we know what a competitive player he is, that it would have to be something serious to keep him out. You know, I'd been hearing that Cirelli and Chernak, it was shocking that they were even playing because they did manage to get through the series, albeit, you know, Cirelli in limited minutes compared to what we would normally expect him to play. I even saw Stamkos walking out of the building last night after it, and you know, he didn't look spry, put it that way. And I don't think it was just, you know, the fact that obviously the disappointment of losing the Stanley Cup Final, you know, I'm sure it's right down the list. I don't recall a series, quite honestly, where that many players went down the tunnel. I mean, remember Kucherov left one of the games in the series with, you know, 4 or 5 minutes left. You know, Nick Paul left at one point and came back and then scored a goal. But you know, it might be basically the whole team at this point. And you know, it makes sense because of the way the Lightning play. They like to pack it in the middle and don't mind blocking shots and you know, sacrificing their body that way. And then you just look at the number of games they played in reaching three Stanley Cup finals inside two calendar years. Just no team has played as much hockey as they have through the pandemic. And I'm sure some combination of those two things led to them being so beat up by the end of it.
With Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider. So this Timothy Liljegren deal, I'm assuming, has been in the shelf for a while. They're just waiting for the season to come to an end. He gets 2 years at $1.4 million. What is your reaction to that deal?
I think it's good value for, you know, what he is at this point in time. I mean, certainly very little risk from the Leafs end of things. And by getting 2 years, if he grows in, becomes more of a regular member of the lineup the next two seasons, I think, you know, it's going to look like a great deal for Toronto. And then we'll be fretting over what number they're going to sign him on beyond that. And, you know, I think the timing is interesting because, you know, they also have Rasmus Sandin, who doesn't have a contract. And, you know, it's sort of natural to lump these two guys together. They've got NHL experience under their belts, but, you know, haven't ever been, you know, full-time members of the team just yet. And I think one or both of them probably have to get to that point next year, just with where the Leafs cap situation is at. They're going to need some cheaper contributors. You know, Mark Giordano did them a favor with his contract, but they're going to need others. And you know, I'm curious to see how the Sandin situation plays out. I know they've talked to his agent. Doesn't sound like anything's close on that end. And I think there's still some uncertainty about whether Sandin is back with the team, just with them already having three guys who shoot left and are under contract ahead of them, and Giordano, Riley, and Muzzin. So, you know, it's the first step in a couple. But, you know, I think just viewing the Liljegren situation alone, that he was a pleasant surprise in some ways this season. And, you know, there's not very many defensemen that are paid at that level that can contribute. And I think there's hope, at least, that he'll be a contributor during those 2 years.
Yeah, I wonder what that means for Sandin. I'd have to believe Sandin's sitting there saying, well, he's going to have demand more than Liljegren got, and I think is worthy of more. So if he re-signs, what is that going to look like?
Well, yeah, it's going to be a higher number, or it's going to be 1 year deal, you know, which would set him up, you know, for a further raise down the road. I think I still think he's wondering where he fits on the team, though, or if, you know, what the plans are for him. You know, do they move him to the right side? Maybe, you know, it seems to me that there's like a little, I don't know if confusion's the right word, but there's just a little bit of uncertainty there. And, you know, I think he's also wondering if he might be traded. You know, I don't have any specific info on that happening. I do know some teams, or at least one team, asked around the deadline, and the Leafs didn't want to do that. I mean, obviously, I think that they're hoping his best years are still to come here in the next couple, and that he'll be ready to be, you know, step into a role with the team as maybe some other guys age out or get traded away. But, you know, right now, I do think this was probably a big week as you get to the draft in Montreal next week. You know, I would expect there'll be more discussions with Sandin's agent and the Leafs, and you know, maybe clarify some of these things and get his signature on a contract. I mean, he doesn't have a ton of leverage. He can't file for arbitration, for example. I mean, all he could do is sit out training camp or something like that. But you know, that's a long ways off, and I don't think we should expect that.
CJ, we talked to you before the playoffs started, and correct me if I'm wrong in saying this, but you said you believed it would be the last year the Leafs would go at this with their kind of core four up front or their top four players. Are you coming off of that, or where are you at with that?
I'd say I'm coming off of that. You know, I'd be surprised now if they moved off one of them.
Why were you on it in the first place?
Well, I know I said something that I didn't mean it probably as strong as it came out, but I think that there were some questions at the time. You know, ultimately, I know we're going to try to hype up the trade deadline or sorry, the draft and all the trades are going to happen there. I just think you're not going to trade away, for example, William Nylander and get better back for the money he's paid. And so I think that they're going to stick with it. I mean, I don't have any reason to believe otherwise. You know, I think in the past they've gauged the market there, and it's just not. There's been nothing that remotely made sense, and so I don't see the conditions changing. You know, there's still a lot of other changes that are going to the team's going to look quite different. You know, obviously the forward lines I think will be, or the depth forwards will be different. We were wondering with the goaltending, but you know, I don't see the top four guys at the forward position changing before next season, and you know, they're gonna give it one more go. It's gonna be tough because it's similar to last summer where I think they actually did a reasonably good job. There's not a ton of cap space when you start handing out these deals and figuring out, you know, how they're gonna fill out the roster.
Do you think the Nazem Kadri story would leave scar tissue to the point where Dubas and company would be afraid to make a move like the one we're suggesting here?
You know, possibly. You know, that's probably, I think it's the move we can point to that is, the at least in my view, the biggest misstep that they made. You know, I understand how they got to that conclusion in the sense that they just felt to some degree that they didn't know if they could trust them when it got to the big games because of what had happened in those two series with Boston. But, you know, at the end of the day, he was a cost control player. You know, he was already delivering better value on his deal in real time, but was also a good bet to keep doing that for the next two or three seasons from when they traded him. And, you know, it didn't work out with Barry. I think Kerfoot's been fine, but certainly doesn't give you the value that Kadri would have. And so I think that there's a bit of a cautionary element there. I mean, when you go into any offseason and say, we have to do this, and I think they did that with Kadri, you know, they identified him as someone that they had to move, and you know they wanted to get a defenseman and to fill a hole at the time, and in return for him, you know, it just didn't work well. And I believe the rumored trades with Calgary that Kadri turned down before he went to Colorado wouldn't have served them any better either. So, you know, I think there is a lesson in what not to do with maybe the approach to how that trade went down.
CJ, you mentioned the word different. Maybe the bottom of the roster is that. You know, we talked earlier in the 4 o'clock hour. It's a copycat league, but you're not copying Colorado and just Cale Makar magically appearing. So, you know, if you're the Maple Leafs, you're looking at. You mentioned, you know, trading Nylander, and that was just a hypothetical. You know, for you're not going to get the same back or the same type of value, but the bottom of the roster, I would say, needs to look different, and I mean different is. You may not have a guy as talented to score goals, but you should be harder to play against. Is that something that maybe you get a sense that Kyle would shift his mentality on, or is it just kind of going to be the same type of value contracts that contribute and chip in offensively and they roll back with the same philosophy to try and win and get deep in the playoffs?
I think it's going to be a similar philosophy, but you know, part of that philosophy is trying to find competitive guys.
Right.
You know, like none of them, I don't think we're going to be talking about headliner signings on July 13th or 14th with the Leafs. You know, there'll be ones that, you know, everyone goes, okay. But, you know, at times, for example, David Camp was useful last year, and he was an under-the-radar signing for them, just in the role he was used in, I mean. And so I think it'll be more like that. And, you know, part of – no one probably wants to hear this, but I think fundamentally the Leafs believe in what they're doing. And they feel that there will be a different result if they get another chance at it, that a lot of teams that have fallen short, you know, just keep rolling back and making adjustments and hope their top guys start to figure it out, like MacKinnon said, on the ice and break through. And so, you know, I don't see a huge change in philosophy here. I mean,
yeah.
The biggest thing is goaltending. I mean, that's the whole, I mean, they let the goalie coach go. They're very likely would look to have two new goaltenders. So, I mean, that's going to be the biggest change. But otherwise, I think they're going to keep doing the same things they've done and hope it turns out differently next spring.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I see it going here also. I mean, I think using the Liljegren example, it's nothing against him in a bubble, but I said this earlier, CJ, like if he's going to be the equivalent of Zach Bogosian or Eric Johnson, I don't see him giving that value. He can't grow to 6'3", 240 between now and game one. And that's what, like, these two teams have done. They're like, if we're going to have a guy playing 14 minutes, he better be a monster that soaks up a ton of ice and hits everything and kills penalties. Liljegren will never be that. Never. But I think Dubas looks at it and goes, he's poised with the puck and smart, and that'll work. And maybe he's right. And if he is, he will puff his chest out, and he will deserve it, and he will deserve every accolade he's ever going to get in the future. And believe me, I hope he's right more than anyone. But 100 years of history would say he's trying to do something that not a lot of other teams have done with success.
So, right. It's fair. You know, and look, Bogosian's, you know, was maybe the smallest D on Tampa.
Right.
And I remember he was the beefy guy in Toronto last year. So, you know, there's definitely a difference there. And you know, maybe there's a room to have more Lyubushkin-type players and physical guys brought in. I mean, and that would probably require a trade of one or both of the young Ds.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting, like what value they have and what they feel like they could flip. You know, like Sandin, if you were to go on the market, I don't know what his value is league-wide. He's, you know, maybe you're the guy to ask. Like, what do you think would be a reasonable asking price if they got to a point where they decided they were going to flip Sandin?
I don't have a strong sense either, right? He's an unproven commodity.
Right.
You know, he's not at the point where Travis Dermott was, right? Like, you'd seen him play more games when they dealt him to Vancouver and didn't get much of a return, just a draft pick. But, you know, I think that Sandin's still young enough and does show you something with the way he skates and moves the puck that, you know, if you're maybe another team's prospect, you know, it's almost like a one-for-one, similar type of players, you know, that could work. But, you know, he's not a massive commodity, I don't think, at this point in time, because it was 4 or 5 years after his draft year, 4 years, I guess, and you still don't totally know what he is yet.
Nope. We don't. We'll find out, though. All right, CJ, get some sleep, buddy. Thank you for doing this.
All right, be well, guys.
Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's Red Tag Days. Visit MapleToyota.com. Yeah, we'll see, man. The Leafs are – they're always a fascinating follow. And obviously here in Toronto, we'll be all over it. And what CJ said doesn't surprise me. Dubas, I think he's a believer in where he's going, what he's got. I know he's got a ton of talent. I fully expect him to be a very good team next year. But I'd like to see some sort of an adjustment between now and next year where they say, all right, this is something that we can change and we will change. Right?
Right.
Like, if it's just, got unlucky, what are you going to do? Okay, you know, we'll see. I hope it works.
I wouldn't plan on it, Bobby.
Well, they had 12 guys, I think, that had career years. Do you think everyone's going to have a career year next year? Like, that's the thing. Like, it's they had 115 points. Do you see them at 117, 120, or is they?
Well, I don't think that matters as much as long as you get in. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. I don't expect them. I don't think they'll win the President's Trophy. Maybe they do. I don't know. But
I think the way that this team is constructed, they've got to identify if this team can be battle-tested to win 16 games in the playoffs. And while it's fresh in our mind, with that roster that we saw in game 7 against Tampa, could you see that team go on and hold up against Colorado. I just don't personally. So like they need to change a few things. It's not trade William Nylander just for the sake of trading him. They might have to have, you know, be a lot harder to play against at the bottom of their roster and have a philosophy change in how you want to play, because those teams were able to adapt. But like I say, who's the JT Compher? Who's the Cogliano and Helm and those guys? Like, it's you
they
know,
never can afford to make to get them at the deadline, Jamie.
But I'm just saying, and it's easy for us to do it right now while it's fresh in our mind, and they're, you know, the Leafs have been done for 2 months. But that has to be part of Kyle's thought process on how, you know, how these teams won a Stanley Cup and how Tampa was that close. If the Leafs are close to what those rosters look like, if you believe with some talent there, then that's how you want to build them. You know, if that makes sense.
Well, yes, I agree, but
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, Joe Sack, what does he know? Julian Breezeball.
Well,
I'm saying, if John Tavares is paid in their model to be a 100-point guy and be dominant and be one of the best players on the ice and create a matchup that's unheard of. So if he's not that, then you're starting at a disadvantage to begin with.
But that's the guy. I'm glad we brought him up, because there's so much focus on Matthews, Marner, Nylander. There's a guy that should be hungrier than anyone else and willing to change more than anyone else. That money's already guaranteed. He's made a fortune his whole career. He's scored a boatload of goals his whole career. If there's one guy that should be looked upon as the leader of someone who's going to show up and block every shot, throw hits for the first time really in his career, drop the gloves if you have to, it's him.
Yeah.
It should be him. Like, you look at it last night against Stamkos, blah, blah, blah. But Stamkos, you know, has had a similar career. You know, little differences, but he has changed into this block. That hit he threw on McKinnon last night was a big hit.
Almost knocked him through the boards. He was
big hit. I have not seen Tavares throw a hit like that. And I don't need to see it during the regular season. But build towards it and come playoff time, if you're not going to score, if you can't keep up all the time, you better be blocking every shot. You better be demanding to take every big draw. Like, he has to. He has to.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something we got to see out of John Tavares. You know?
Yeah.
Like, because let's be honest, in the playoffs, like this playoff, it was a 7-game playoff. He got better as the playoff went on. Early in that round, he wasn't great. And, you know, he's a guy that kind of just plays the same all the time. He doesn't change his disposition in the playoffs. And I think you have to. You got to change your attitude. You have to.
That's why we were talking at the start of this, you know, show about Nazem Kadri. You know, his attitude. He brings that chip. He brings that confidence, that cockiness, and he wants to be a difference maker and, you know, do whatever it takes to win. And we saw what happened.
Yep. Jay Sox tonight down at the Rogers Center. Gosman on the mound. The bullpen's leaking oil at this point, man. He's got to go deep tonight. But the Sox are rolling in, and they're the hottest offense in baseball. Phillips will help us break that down. We'll do that next. All right, Jay Sox tonight. The Jays dropping 2 of 3 in Milwaukee after dropping 2 of 3 in Chicago, dropping games to the Yankees, splitting a series against Baltimore. It's not exactly a positive scene right now for the Jays, but they're still in a wild card spot. And they're still well above 500. They still have a plus 23 run differential. But Tampa's right there with them. Tampa's tied. They've won 3 in a row. And now the Sox are a game and a half ahead of them. And the Sox have won 7 in a row. And they got the hottest bats in baseball right now. And to tee up the series with Boston in town, here's our TSN MLB analyst, Steve Phillips. Obviously, you know this better than us, Steve. You know, baseball, the disposition stays the same day in, day out. Nothing really changes. It is a long grind. But would you expect the mood in the clubhouse here in Toronto to be a little bit owly today, or a little bit, you know, less enthusiastic considering what's been going on recently?
Yeah, I think there's probably a little level of frustration going on. And you know, the idea of elevate your level of play now that you're playing a team directly in front of you that you're familiar with in the division that, you know, that's in the wild card race in front of you. So I think that you know, they should come out with a little bit of fire. The one thing I'm mostly concerned about is the bullpen. because over the last 2 days, they've gotten worn down. And at some point, they're going to probably have to separate Berríos and Kikuchi in the rotation, because if they throw back-to-back clunkers, then it could wipe you out for a week. And so they really do need a quality start. They need some length and some depth in the rotation just to protect the pen, to let them recover for a day or two, because they've been a bit exposed in recent days. So it's a big series. And sometimes, you know, when you play intra-division, it sort of wakes you up a little bit, gets you back to some familiarity. And they do need to get things going a little bit and build some momentum right now. But it's hard to have a lot of momentum when your starting pitching hasn't been good. And, you know, and obviously those two spots in the rotation have not been good, you know, off and on for a good part of the season.
Well, how concerned are you would be if you were Ross hearing the comment Berríos being linked into a comment with Kikuchi in the same sentence? It's like his expectations. We talked about him earlier, Steve. He's supposed to be the ace of the staff.
Yeah, it's listen, I'm with you, and I hear you, and something's not right. And you know, I watched, breaking him down. I just did a segment on SportsCenter, and you know, the issue isn't that he's not throwing strikes; he's not throwing quality strikes. So what happens is you'll watch, and they did a rip of hits against him and showed where the catcher's glove was and where the pitch ended up. And so you know, it's still a strike. But, you know, there's a reason why the catcher calls for a pitch in a certain pitch in a certain location, because typically it's to the hole of the hitter, or you've set the hitter up for that spot. And the hitter may be looking away, your catcher's setting up in, and you throw the ball away, and you throw it right into the hitter's wheelhouse, and that's what's happening to him. The home run ball, the exit velocity, the line drives. And the other interesting thing with him is his home road splits are rather dramatic. I mean, he's got an ERA in the threes at home, and it's like a 7 on the road, which is, again, oftentimes that's mental, or it's preparation, where, you know, when you're the road team, you warm up, you sit down in the dugout, wait for your team to hit, then you go out onto the field. And is that affecting him in some way with his warm-up routine? So there's a lot of things they can try. I also think that his delivery, if you think about it and watch him or watch some video, it's very rotational. It's not really linear. Like a lot of times the pitcher will come up, strike on home plate, and everything's moving in that direction. It sure seems to me like his shoulders and hips rotate a lot, that he kind of cuts across the strike zone sometimes. So there are certainly some things to look at. They're going to try to fix it while he's active. But I think at some point, if he doesn't get it resolved in a start or two, then you may see him come up with a hangnail injury of some significance. And then they'll back him off, give him some bullpen sessions, send him on a rehab assignment to try to rebuild him that way. It's happened before with guys. I had signed Steve Traxel 1 year. He was so bad. And so we approached him about sending him to the minor leagues, but he had the right to veto it. And I remember he went home and talked to his wife, and his wife said, "Yeah, I'd send you to the minor leagues too. You better say yes. I mean, you can't keep pitching like this, so let's go." Right. I mean, so I was like, man, she was great in that way. The good news is, like Traxel, Berríos is a really, really fine young man. He's a workaholic. He's going to work and do everything he can, and there's nothing that anybody can get down on him more than he's down on himself. So, but don't be surprised that if he doesn't get it right in the next couple starts with some level of consistency, that they find a way to back him out of it to be able to start to rebuild him.
Steve, that Traxel, like, maybe you should have told him to speed it up a little bit. He was one of the slowest pitchers.
Seriously?
He was one of the slowest pitchers in Major League Baseball history.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I remember sitting in my box watching the game he's pitching, and the fans are chanting, "Throw the ball, throw the ball." And I got to tell you what, I joined in. I was right there with him. I was chanting it as well, thinking, like, dude, throw the ball, man. Like, playing behind a pitcher that works that slowly, infielders get back on their heels, and you also don't get run support, because there's no rhythm, there's no energy, there's no pathway to get that energy going offensively. And it didn't matter how many times we said it, how many people said it, and what language we said it, he still couldn't get it.
Yeah, and he threw the pizza to Mark McGwire too, I think, in St. Louis. He was the guy on the other end of it. Go ahead, Hayes.
Not good. Not the best.
It's not the best.
Anyway, we're Steve Phillips. Well, now you're rolling over to tonight, where the bullpen is on fumes, and they have no days off for a long, long 2 weeks. And they got 3 against Boston. They got 5 against Tampa. They got a 4-game series that turned into a 5-game series. They're playing a doubleheader on Saturday. And Boston rolls in here. They're the hottest team in baseball. They got the hottest bats in baseball. They're 22-12 in their last 44 games. Gausman, I think he's got to go six tonight. I think. And yesterday, Barrios, they were going to leave him out, and Montoya just couldn't do it. He's like, I got to pull this guy. It's a disaster. I got to save him somehow and save us. How much pressure is on Gausman tonight? I think he's got to have a great performance, and even if he doesn't against him, I think he's got to go six tonight.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that somebody at some point, if your pitchers don't, somebody becomes the sacrificial lamb, right? They're the ones you leave out there to take it for the team. But I'm with you. And look, part of the reason he gave Gausman that big contract was for moments like this. He got a big deal too. So go out there and pitch and pitch like an ace. Be the stopper for your team. Get them back on track again. And look, we're only asking you to do it against the hottest hitting baseball team. I think they're 19-4 in the month of June are the Red Sox. So they're playing great. But it's funny because Bobby Valentine, who was my longtime manager and obviously managed for the Rangers for a bit and the Red Sox, he would always say to me, I'd much rather play a team that's playing hot, that's really hot coming into a new series than a team that's cold. And I looked at him, I'm like, what? It's like, give me the team that lost 10 of their last 11 rather than the team that's won 10 of 11. He goes, no, because the team that's been hot is due to cool off. And so I'd rather take that team on. I thought he was crazy. But maybe, that's something that Charlie Montoyo can say, look, we got them right where we want them because they're 19-4 the month of June. It's not the way I would look at it, but it has been a way that others have looked at it in the past.
Yeah, that's glass half full thinking for sure. But this is a big homestand, man. Like, you got 8 games in the next 7 days against Boston and Tampa. You got to do more than survive. Like, these are the teams you're competing with now. If you concede the Yankees are going to win the division, then you got to keep going, man. You got to keep up with these teams. And
yeah, you really do. You do. And the advantage is it's a double win when you beat them.
Yep.
But it's a double loss when you lose. And they're all playing each other, too. So Tampa's playing New York, and then they flip-flop. And so it's going to be they're all going to beat up on each other over the next couple weeks.
They sure will, Steve. Enjoy the games tonight, buddy. We'll do it later in the week. Thank you for this.
All right, you bet. Thank you, guys.
Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. So we got some breaking news here. Kyrie Irving is
outrageous.
Opting in to his player option for 2022-23 in Brooklyn.
Is that code for nobody wants me?
I think that's code for two things. One, no one else wants me. Two, as much as I'd love to opt out and go sign for the mid-level exception at $6 million, I can't leave $31 million on the table.
Yeah, of course.
When I've already been throwing money away for the last year and a half anyway. And this quote, okay,
this is
the best quote ever, because Kyrie literally is doing something hundreds of players, if not thousands of players, have done. He's just opting in. He's opting in.
It's maybe new for him, though. Go ahead.
It could be. Quote, this is Kyrie Irving. Normal people keep the world going, but those who dare to be different lead us into tomorrow. I've made my decision to opt in. See you in the fall. End quote. Again, he is daring to be different by opting in.
Like he's bucking a trend or something. It's just so stupid.
You're opting into the contract. Okay. You have no other
options.
As
I read that tweet, Hayes, I'm like, this guy, no one else wanted you, and it finally kicked in, and he's like, yeah, I'm staying. And his agent's probably saying, you're taking the damn money.
Right. Exactly. Now the question becomes, what is the Brooklyn Nets thinking? What is Steve Nash thinking? What is Sean Marks, the GM, thinking? Are they happy with this? Did they bluff him into doing this?
Well, what could their counteraction? How could they counter this? Like, okay, nothing?
He's playing. As far as I know, he's playing. Like, he'll be a Brooklyn Net. Locks in. He'll be back. That means Durant will likely be back. Ben Simmons, maybe he's going to be okay and actually play.
We'll spinal.
Broken back.
Spinal. Anyway, we'll come back into our best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Recap the Stanley Cup playoffs. Tee up the Jays game one more time. And again, the Hockey Hall of Fame. The announcement is out for the class of 2022. We'll put a bow on that as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I can't stop looking at the over in the Jays game tonight. It's a big total, 9.5, but both offenses are explosive. The Jays bullpen is a mess right now. I think Gausman will pitch fine, but once it gets to the bullpen, who knows? Like, I could see tonight being a 6-5 game. you know, something like that. I could see a high-scoring game tonight, so I'll take the over. I'm going to have George Springer registering a hit tonight, paying minus 230. There's some juice there, but these are the kind of games when Springer's healthy. I'm not sure he's at 100%, but he generally sets the tone in a game like tonight. And I'm going to bet the run line, 1.5 Yankees at home against Oakland. They had to battle for that win yesterday. They were getting no hit again. They got no hit on Saturday. They were getting no hit yesterday. Then what happens? Judge walks them off. They end up getting a split against Houston. Mm-hmm. And I think they roll tonight. So those are the three bets I'm on tonight. Today's Best Bets brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. So the cup has been handed out. Shout out to Colorado. We'll see what their parade is like. I'm expecting fireworks, right? When you get a new team winning a cup,
man, it can
get crazy. And I expect that.
Think about the, like, Nazem Kadri winning the Stanley Cup, and his agent's probably like, take 24 hours, pal, have fun, and then we have to talk. Because that's, like, around the corner, man.
Yeah, it's, like, 2 weeks away.
Yeah, a couple weeks away. But
do they still have that, like, stupid meeting thing? Or
about the five-day grace period?
Yeah, they could... Whatever. Yeah. I don't even know what the hell that was.
Well, it's to prevent tampering, because all of a sudden we're sitting there, free agency starts at noon, and at 12:01, Bobby Mack's like, "Ah, there's a 7-year deal to report."
Right.
Really? They got it done in 60 seconds. Like it's a circumventing. It's actually smart,
so they still have that.
Yes, you can.
It used to be 10 days. Now it's 5, but yeah, basically it's a buffer so they can say, hey, what do you want out of us?
Exactly.
The deals are done. So yeah, that turns over quickly. We got Jay Sox tonight. I am fascinated to see how Gosman pitches tonight and how they respond. What a week with the Sox in town, then Tampa in town for 5. So we got a big homestand here for the Jays. And we spent a lot of time talking about the Hockey Hall of Fame, and credit to the Sedin brothers both going in. They came into the league together. They played together their whole careers. Now they're going to the Hall of Fame together. Roberto Luongo, Daniel Alfredson. So they're going in. Finnish women's hockey legend Riikka Salonen is going in as well. First woman, I believe, that is non-Canadian or non-American. So that's big. And in the builders category, Herb Carnegie also going in.
Yeah.
And he's a Toronto legend. And Herb Carnegie Arena, maybe the best rink in the city. One of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Used to be North York Centennial.
Long overdue.
Yes. So shout out to everyone going into the hall. We'll continue to break down who we think should be in, who we don't think should be in.
But
Joe from
yes
the Bridge
guy.
With an interesting
tomorrow.
Idea. Confirm or deny Hall of Fame version.
Yes. Ooh. I like that idea. Just to make sure everyone affiliated with the hall hates this show. We'll do everything we can. I'm going to drag you guys into the muck.
No way.
Drag me right in there. It's you guys just, are coming down right into the pit.
Well, at least Miles didn't play that drop again, because he played it 45 times today.
Miles, save it for me before we head out. I'm not going to say a word. I'll just say 4 p.m. after that little nugget.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the news of this hour is Kyrie Irving opting in to his contract.
How is that even a decision? There was it 31 million? 31,
it's
wasn't it?
36 million.
I'm sorry, 36.
36 million, exactly. Like anyone, like financially, you have to do it. And Woj of ESPN is tweeting out that without the ability to find a sign and trade deal, Kyrie plans to exercise. Now, the deadline, I think, was still a couple of days out, but clearly he had been given information immediately that was blunt.
Exactly.
No one is doing this. No one. Yeah. So you have two
That's
options.
That's scary.
That is scary. And guess what? Brooklyn has an option to sign him to a long-term deal. That is not an option. Brooklyn will not do it. So you either opt in, and now you come back, and you finish it off with KD, and we'll see what comes of Ben Simmons, etc. Or you could have opted out and signed a mid-level exception with one of the teams you wanted to go to, which was about $6 million. And clearly, cooler heads prevailed for Kyrie in his camp, and they said, what are we doing here? $36 million, opt in, see what happens.
I guarantee, Hayes, I wish everybody the best in sports. Like, no drama, just success, play well. There will be something come up with him. And it just, it will be something corny. Like, there's no COVID anymore. Something will come up.
Something's coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Something. Like, and now he's opting in. Now it could be a protest against Brooklyn. You know, I'm coming in. It's like when the Costanzas moved down to Florida with the Seinfelds. You're going to see me in the pool, the shuffleboard court. Like, he's going to be doing everything. And I'm quite intrigued to see how it all plays out. All right, we're out of here. This is going to be a fun one tomorrow. I can feel it. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at It's a Hall with some plaques in there.
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.